This podcast is sponsored by AAA, the American Automobile Association. AAA members get discounts on tickets, resort accommodations, and more at Walt Disney World and other Orlando attractions. If you book a qualifying Walt Disney World Resort vacation package at select AAA offices, you'll receive a free subscription to touringplans.com, as well as dedicated trip planning resources just for AAA clients. Go to AAA.com or ask your local AAA travel agent for more details on this offer. All right, welcome back to another episode of the Unofficial Guide Disney Dish podcast with Jim Hill. We're continuing our tour of Disneyland, and today we're going to walk through Critter Country. And I'd like to welcome Jim back to the show. Jim, how's it going?
Hey, I'm not a critter.
But this is your country.
Ah, this is true.
All right, so this is Critter Country is an interesting part of the park because it's one of the few areas that it's not only is it not off the hub, but you can't get anywhere else. Once you're inside Critter Country, you have to double back through New Orleans Square to get there. And I always thought from the perspective of theme park design, it was unusual in that respect. Why haven't they ever like expanded Critter Country out to, you know, put in like a railroad stop or something else?
Oh, Lynn. There was a plan.
There's a plan.
There was an amazing plan, actually.
An amazing plan.
Literally, the idea was that you were going to be able to walk around the entirety of Rivers of America, that beyond what was known then as Bear Country, there was going to be the Lost Continent. And then on the other side of that was going to be Big City USA. Big City USA. You have to understand just because something doesn't get built doesn't mean that the Imagineers didn't plan something. I mean, you got to understand that this was always a dead end and somewhat problematic. And they recognized it right off the get-go. I mean, early on, this was where the Indian Village was.
This was back when the park had just first opened. This was, Critter Country was originally part of Frontierland, right?
That's it, exactly. And so they had an Indian dance area here, the little encampment. And, of course, the interesting thing is you would, if you think about it, you're going here through the Rivers of America, the boat goes by, sees the real Indians, and then you continue, around the curve here, and here are our fake Indians, that they knew that they wanted to do something. And more to the point, this was a side of the park that wasn't getting enough traffic that, Mansion helped, but they only went that far.
Yeah, no one's going out to the left on Mansion. Yeah. Okay.
And again, they are developing attractions for Walt Disney World. And one of the what they feel are the immediate hits, even before it opens at Walt Disney World, the Country Bear Jamboree, they just, oh my God, this is going to be huge. This is going to be so successful. And they convinced themselves that it was going to be so successful here that they're going to build an entire land around the Country Bear Jamboree.
Really?
And not only that, they felt it was going to be so successful as opposed to one theater in Florida. They built two here. So
really?
Two Country Bear shows back to back.
Just to keep up with the demand.
And
I have to say. Ha! All right, go ahead.
So, that opens in 72. And they spend all of this money. I mean, they create a Pacific Northwest Redwoods feel to it. They build
those. Where was it?
Literally right here. This is
we're standing at the Hungry Bear restaurant now.
That was the restaurant that was built aside to deal with the giant crowds that they anticipated. They built the largest bathroom in the history of the Disney theme park.
It's a pretty big set of bathrooms.
All anticipating that the bears are going to bring them. The bears are going to bring people back here. So they throw open in 72, and for about 3 months, it's busy. But again, one of the things you got to understand about Disneyland is it's the world's most famous regional theme park. And guests are coming from 100, miles around, or 60, 70% of the guests. So they sample it, they like the show, but it's not something they have to go back and see.
It's not like it's a thrill ride that you have to experience over and over again.
No, that's it exactly. So now what happens is that 3 years in, they begin to realize that, they have spent all this money and people are just not going back into this part of the park. And so what do we do? And now they begin looking at, can we bring something else back in here that would drive people back into the section? And they had just begun programming this. So again, this opened in 72, so we're talking 75, thereabouts. They've just begun programming the figures for the American Adventure, and they have a working Mark Twain.
Really? So Epcot opened in 82, so 8 years before that, they had already started developing the...
Literally, Mark Twain from the chest up. From the chest up, It was a presentation piece. They were still searching at that point for a sponsor for American Adventures. So it's like, come in and see Mark Twain. And the notion was, well, look, all right, we have Tom Sawyer's Island. What if we take, you know, we just, clearly the Bear Country theme is not working. It's just not exciting people. It's not going to, so what if we did, we change it from Bear Country to Dixieland?
Okay.
All right. Because, again, think about it. We've got the mansion here that's a pseudo, you know, bayou thing.
You kind of see the theme.
Okay. And what they do is, like, we take one of the theaters of the Country Bear Theater, and, you know, they literally had conversations with Hal Holbrook about this. The idea was they would basically take one theater, put the audio animatronic Mark Twain in it, and basically do Mark Twain Tonight, where the AA figure Mark Twain would start to tell stories about his famous characters, and the little revolving stages would turn around, and you'd get, you know, the Connecticut Yankee and King Arthur at this court. You'd get the Prince and the Pauper. You'd get Tom Sawyer, Huck Finn.
That's,
you know,
sort of the same. So that's almost the same setup that they have with Country Bear, where different scenes turn around.
That's it, exactly. I mean, you keep the exact same infrastructure. You just lose the bears. you know, it gets better. What they were going to do is they were going to move the rafts to go over to Tom Sawyer's Island, put them right here. We're right at the water's edge.
Yep.
They were going to change the restaurant here, the Country Bear, to Aunt Polly's. You know, so you do this whole Dixieland overlay.
Sure.
And that way, all right, now you've got two attractions back here. You've moved the rafts so people have to move deeper into the park. You're carrying the story elements forward from the mansion. It's like, okay, so that kind of works. That got very, very far along. Until, you know, then in a weirder bend on the idea, they decided, well, no, maybe what we really need back here, you know, and this is the thing, Dick Nunes constantly was pushing for, we need a flume ride.
A flume ride.
You know, that he,
why? Why?
Well, you know, that he had actually been over to Knott's Berry Farm. And if you know that park with, you know, the flume right in the middle of the park, it was one of these things, it's a great kinetic. It gets, you know, it gets people wet, it gets them excited, and it's sort of like, let's do that. Let's put, you know, let's drive them into this part of the park.
Sure. You can see it from a distance, you can hear it.
Yeah, and it just, and it gives us something advertised, because again, this is the 70s, and Disney is really feeling the competition. You know, for example, Magic Mountain opened the American Revolution, you know, the first steel corkscrew, the attraction. So Disney felt that we need thrill rides, we need to compete with, you know, the outside market. So that's where Splash Mountain came from, that's where Big Thunder came from. But again, we've done coasters, we gotta do a flume. Let's do a flume. So what they come up with, you know, and again, the interesting thing is that let's double down on Bear Country. All right, so what we're gonna do is we're gonna build a flume attraction beyond Country Bears. You know, it's not gonna be where Splash is right now. You've got to go deeper into the world.
Oh, wow. So right now, the way the Critter Country goes, it's you leave New Orleans Square and pass Haunted Mansion. Then you've got the bulk of the Splash Mountain attraction, and then you've got the Hungry Bear restaurant. You're saying it'd be beyond even where Hungry Bear is?
Yeah, literally deeper into the woods. Because again,
wow.
these are the good bears that live in town. When you get into the woods, these are the wild, crazy bears. These are the bears that make moonshine. In fact, that's actually the name of the attraction. It was going to be called the Moonshine Express. And the idea is, again, you would love this ride, Len. Here's the gimmick of the attraction. As you're going through the queue, you are being deputized, all right? Bear sheriff of Bear Country is like, them bears out there doing moonshine again. You know, we're going to go bust them up. And so you got in your log, which had, again, predating Buzz Lightyear's Space Ranger Spin, you had a gun, all right? And so you're now going to go through the woods in your log. And the idea is... Just a good old boy. And when you see the bears that are doing moonshine, you shoot. And, of course, the barrels explode and the still explodes. But then the bears start shooting back, you know?
Oh, Lord.
But, again, it ended with the same element. It ended with the, you know, the slide down the hill. And, you know, it just... The Moonshine Express, and got, again, really close to being made. We're talking 78, 79 now, but of course...
The quality of drugs then must have been much better than it is.
It was more to the point that they were looking to do, you know, again...
Something, it's interactive, I get it.
And just drive people deep in the park, but now...
But they were going to keep Country Bears.
Yeah, well, again, just figure, like, look, it's just, we're not doing it right. It's popular in Florida.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it just, we're doing something wrong here. So we'll just double down, we'll build this other attraction which features the Bears.
Sure.
Finally, this will work. But again, 78, 79, and obviously most of the company's efforts are now on Epcot. It's like, okay, we're going to do that idea. But in the interim, to try to, you know, figure, all right, we don't have the money, we don't have to do anything huge. They begin exploring the idea of, well, what if we did seasonal shows for Country Bear? Would that drive them deeper into the park?
Mm-hmm.
So you got, you know, I mean, you've seen the two shows.
The Christmas show
and the vacation show. But what people don't realize is there were four written. There was a Valentine's Day show written. And I've actually seen the story sketches for the Halloween version where it's Henry as a vampire. I mean, literally with the cope, the cape.
That would have been clever.
You know, and they had... Big Al as Frankenstein with the big forehead, and you know, I mean,
it's great.
You know, I mean, there were a lot of clever ideas they were going to do, but of course, Epcot opens, doesn't really meet its attendance expectations, and that precipitates green mail, and that precipitates a management change, and here's Eisner coming through the door. And meantime, Bruce Gordon, Tony Baxter are working, and they're looking at Moonshine Express, and the reality is, like, look, all right. It just isn't going to work. You know, the Bears aren't working.
Yeah.
You know, and then now we're going to bet on the Bears. And it's just, and meanwhile, you know, Tony one day is driving into the work and he's thinking, Dick Nunes wants his Flume ride. And meanwhile, attendance has fallen through the floor for America Sings, which has all of Mark Davis's wonderful figures and Mark, who did all of the design work for, a lot of the characters in Song of the South.
Mm-hmm.
And somewhere caught in traffic as he's driving into work, it's one of these great peanut butter and jelly moments. It's like, you know, because he just seen, you know, they went to a movie night and saw a Song of the South, and it's like walking to work and, oh my God, we take the Flume ride, we take the figures from America Sings, we put those in the attraction, we theme it around, Song of the South, and we get a ride that... We got a Flume ride that celebrates a Disney movie that puts more characters in the park, and everyone's like, "Oh, okay." Ah.
So, but at the time, was Disney still showing Song of the South?
Well, that's...
Or this was like a backyard sort of screening.
Well, no, that was the thing that he had actually had to go to a film society to see this.
Okay. And so it wasn't like a theatrical re-release or anything like that.
Well, this is the thing that when Eisner comes to power in the company in '84, and actually. About two or three weekends in to, shows up on a Saturday at Imagineering with his son, Breck, mm-hmm. and does a walkthrough of the model shop. And here's, we honestly owe Splash Mountain to Breck Eisner because, you know, he was the one who, walking past all of these models for all of these attractions, just stopped at the floor, "Dad, look at this. This is so cool. I'd love to ride this." And I was like, all right, well, my son seems excited about this. What is this? And, you know, and so they give him the info, and it's like, wow, Song of the South?
Yeah, that's a tough one. That's a tough one to greenlight.
So what they did is they decided, look, all right, you have to prove to me that this isn't going to be controversial. So what they decide to do very surreptitiously is they do a limited return to theaters of Song of the South. It literally goes December of 86. Goes out into theaters for 2 weeks.
Really?
And Disney and everybody in Imagineering holds their breath waiting for the hate mail to come in.
Yeah.
And, you know, for the news reports. And nothing happens.
Yeah. That wouldn't happen now, but...
No, not at all. And no. So it's like, okay, you proved to me it's not controversial. We can do it. But that said, the one condition that Eisner said is Uncle Remus can't be in it. So that's why, for example, you get the Brer Frog
Brer
character.
Brer Frog, yeah.
You know, he fills in for, you know, Uncle Remus. But yeah, so they go forward with construction here, and not to say that they didn't run into a few problems. In fact, you know, this being Disney, you know, they announced the project, and that kind of a famous story about, and to show what a great man Frank Wells was, and why we still miss him to this day in the company, that, you know, this was going to be a $30 million attraction. And, you know, Frank... You know, just was in the meeting, and they do the whole presentation for him and said, "How much is this going to be?" "It's $30 million. It's like, "Oh God, guys, I can't take that to Eisner."
Yeah.
And so he says, "All right, start over." And he literally
says, "Start over."
Well, no, he says, "As in, start the presentation over again," because they'd walked him through every scene.
Okay.
And Frank literally stands there with the Imagineers and is like, "Okay, here's our opening scene. do I need all of these AA figures? So you've got six cranes in there. Can you do four? And he literally walks through each scene and peels out, you know, it's like one element here, one element here, one element here. And it's like, all right, how much money have we taken out? How much money have we taken out? And it's like, gets it down to 27. It's like, okay, now I can take it to Eisner because I can say, I made you guys take $3 million out of the attraction. And it was like, and it's like, it literally, he was like, he was collaborating with them. It's like, I beat those bastards down. You know, they were going to do, they wanted $30 million. I got $27
million. Those crazy bastards wanted $30 million.
So that's it. And that was the thing. Frank actively worked with them. Yeah. You know, Frank recognized, you know, it's like, look, and in fact, the thing that they loved about him in this presentation is like, guys, this is too expensive. And there was this sort of horrible moment, that, but we can't not build this. This is so great. So it's like, help me. Let's go through and just take things out. And it's like, they to this day, they miss him because he was the guy in the room who'd fight for you, not fight against you. So so anyway, they get, but again, they're still under the pressure of, got to lower the cost, and so it's like we have to reduce scope. And I won't say the name of the Imagineer who did this, but it was like word came down that, you know, well, we've got to lower the price of the thing by 10%. And what he literally did is he took the blueprints and took them to the Xerox machine and just hit 90%.
Just the scale.
Just the scale, and then sent those off to the manufacturers, to the fabricators. And there was this horrible period when they opened it and began test and adjust. And it was like nothing was fitting. And it was, why is that? And it was like, oh my God, these are all been crept in down to 90%. So, I mean, that's one of the reasons why Splash Mountain, which was supposed to open in for Christmas of 88, didn't open until June of 89. There were lots of people with jackhammers, you know.
Really?
And that coupled with the fact that, I mean, for example, the drop here was so steep initially. In fact, the first person who rode the ride, who was not supposed to ride the ride, it was a maintenance worker after hours who had noticed that they were cycling boats and climbed in one. The boat hit the bottom. He broke his leg.
Really?
Yeah. So, they then had to go in and jackhammer and adjust the drop just so. So it had more of a, had less of an impact down at the bottom.
Wow.
But, you know, Eisner was the first one to officially ride it once it did work.
Successfully.
Successfully, but he was, Bruce Gordon was telling me the story about Michael, you know, showed up in a suit, and it's like, Michael, it's a water ride. And so they literally reach into like a trash can and pull out the liner and cut it in. And so it's Michael Eisner in his suit wearing a trash bag as he rides through it. And when it comes back in, you know, slowly, you know, how was your ride, sir? And they look into his log and there's 6 inches of water. And it's like, well, it's a wonderful ride except for the 6 inches of water. You know, can we do something about the water? And absolutely, we can adjust that. But yeah, I mean, it opened and it finally did what it was supposed to do.
Oh, yeah, it's pulling tons of people
in.
Yeah, it's
but
pulling.
But here's the problem. They only came to here.
So we're right at the entrance now of Hungry Bear. We're sort of at the end of the straightaway coming from New Orleans Square. And for the rest of Critter Country goes back into the left, but people don't really go all the way back there. And there's some really good snack shops back there. You're saying people wouldn't come back here originally?
No, in fact, that was what was so frustrating, that they would literally come down here, they would do Splash Mountain, but they wouldn't walk the 20 feet across the street to go into Country Bear.
Country Bear was here, where Winnie the Pooh is now.
And that's what kind of becomes the saddest part of the story, that we're now into the mid-90s, and they're just staring down the barrel of the fact that Country Bears just is no longer working as an attraction at Disneyland. It's not drawing crowds. Now, to underline how ironic this is the exact same time as the park is pulling the plug on Country Bear. This is when the studio is making the Country Bear movie.
Oh!
You know, I mean, literally, the same 6 months, it's like, we're not going to do this anymore. We're making a movie!
Hey!
You know, and so whatever synergy you could have gotten is gone. All right?
Wow. And you know, the movie guys are like, it's been running for 12 years. You can't keep it open until February?
No, I mean, that's it exactly. So, you know, they just dug in their heels and they said no.
Yeah, so now we're sitting We're in the very back of Critter Country right now. So we've got the entrance to Splash Mountain. The fast passes are really way behind.
Well, again,
you
have to commit. If you want to spare a fast pass, you've got to commit.
And that's really interesting because I don't think Disney would do that anymore. Like for when we were at DCA, for example, they put the fast passes for Radiator Springs far up in the thing. So in the back there's a little snack shop. There's some souvenirs and stuff like that.
But, you know, one of my favorite little bits of Disney history, in order to try to drive people into this park, they actually used to have singing and dancing groups out here. But the thing is, the stage was literally up against the entrance to the men's and women's room. So these poor guys would go into use the restroom, but they walk out, you know, sort of adjusting their flight in the middle of a song and dance number. So
hello, my baby. You know, hello, my darling.
You know, try to get off the
spotlight on them. Oh, that's awkward.
So anyway, again, so mid-90s, and now, again, this is the new Disney company where you don't build something for the theme parks if you can't put a character in it. And so, you know, the notion is we've got to drive people deeper into this park, and who's our most popular character? And behind Mickey, it's Pooh. So literally, that's the music you hear in the background here, folks. What they did is they shut down Country Bear, they gutted the two theaters, they basically took the attraction that had been designed for Walt Disney World. And again, just to stress here, not the Japan version, not with the cool, you know, technology. You know, this was, we're just going to do a dark ride and throw it in there. And, you know, I mean, mind you, all good Disney fans know that there's little touches in there that pay tribute to the attraction that used to be there. That if you look at the right place at the right time, you can still see Buck and Melvin and Buff, you know, up there on the wall, just past the Heffalump and Woozle scene. But no, this is what it is. It's now Critter Country by way of Winnie the Pooh.
It's still pretty popular. I mean, it's still pretty packed.
Well, face it, Pooh did finally close the deal. And in fact, that this is where you can go to see, you know, Winnie the Pooh. You know, kids will come back here. And, you know, it also means now that Bear Country is doing the business that it's doing. The pushback from the Imagineers was that, look, Pooh, if we were going to build a Pooh land, it should have been in Fantasyland. It should have been, over there. In fact, to be honest, that was the original plan for Mickey's Toontown. That literally half the land was going to be the 100-acre wood.
Wow.
You know, that there was going to, before Roger Rabbit hit, there was going to be, you know, the neighborhood where Mickey, Winnie the Pooh, Goofy, and that's it, or excuse me, Mickey, Donald, Goofy, they lived, and then the countryside was going to be Winnie the Pooh.
Really?
Yeah. So,
but it ended up here.
Yeah.
Oh, good. Interesting. All right, so should we walk over towards Frontierland?
Let's do it.
Great, fabulous. All right, Frontierland will be another episode. For now, this is Len Tessa. Thanks very much to Jim for being on the show. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and we'll see you on the next show.